Welcome. This is Hear Us Roar, a podcast where we talk with women writers about both their debut novels and their journey to publication. Our thanks go out to the Women's Fiction Writers Association for their support of this podcast. WFWA is a volunteer-run organization dedicated to providing a community for career-focused women fiction writers via networking, education, and continuing support of their career growth. If you'd like to learn more or to join WFWA, visit womensfictionwriters.org. I'm Maggie Smith, author of Truth and Other Lies, and your podcast host. Welcome, everybody, to the podcast. And our guest today is Linda Moore, and her debut novel was Attribution. She published it through She Writes Press in October of 2022. We're going to talk mainly about that book in the first half of the podcast, but she also has a new book out that's coming in May, so we're going to touch on that briefly as well. Welcome to the podcast, Linda.
Hi, Maggie. Thanks for interviewing me. I want to wish you and all the people at the Women's Fiction Writers Association congrats on 10-year anniversary. That's so impressive. You guys have done a wonderful job of building a community, and I'm happy to be involved with it.
Well, great. Yes, we're very proud of everybody that's in it, all 2,000 plus people. So let's hear a little bit about Attribution. When you're at the bookstore reading or at the festival and people say, what's this book about? What do you say?
Attribution is the story of a young art historian, doctoral candidate, who leaves her grieving family in Michigan to go to New York and finish her doctorate, and runs smack up against a very misogynist faculty advisor. She fears she's going to be thrown out of the program or not survive until she finds a hidden painting that she believes is a Baroque masterpiece in the basement of the university. And she decides to take it to Spain and find the experts who can prove it. So that's where the story begins. And her journey is mostly in Spain. And you'll get some art history light, I say, but also a lot of information about how art experts decide who created a particular work of art, hence the title Attribution.
Well, I know you have a background in art history and owning a gallery and a lot of things in that world. So I'm imagining that's part of why you picked this to write about. Where did the idea come from otherwise, other than that?
Unlike most of my books, this is a very specific incident that I can point to. I was a trustee of the San Diego Museum of Art, and our curator of European art gave a talk about finding a work of art that was labeled school of something or other. And he decided to attribute that work and work on figuring out who actually painted it. And that was 2009. And when I heard that lecture, I was riveted. I thought, this is like, you know, the best kind of forensic movie.
Yeah, it's like a mystery. Yeah.
It is. And the process he used, which, you know, was multi-layered and included all kinds of things, everything from chemistry to the, you know, politics of people who are in this world. And I just filed the idea away. And then after I had gone through Stanford's novel writing program, I decided to write a novel that was a straight timeline in contemporary times, but had elements of history and so forth. So I pulled out that story and wrote it a bit differently. In fact, the curator I spoke about read the book, and he told me at first he thought, this is my story. He said, then I realized, no, it wasn't my story. But in any case, it was a great adventure, and it took a lot of twists and turns that I didn't expect myself.
And you have lived in Spain, I believe.
Yes.
You have that as a background, too.
I but many years ago, I was a junior. My junior year, I spent abroad at the what is called Complutense University of Madrid. I took art history in the Prado Museum. I was a political science major, so art history was not my background. But I always came back to art, and I have a lot of art under my belt in terms of running the gallery, as well as being a trustee and studying and
Right.
being involved in a lot of art programs.
So all the pieces were there. You just kind of put them together into something. What was the most difficult character in the novel for you to get a hold of?
At first, I would say Kate, the protagonist. There are a lot of people who say to me, Linda, is Kate you? And I said, well, I've never stolen a painting, so I don't think so.
I'm not going to tell you about it.
I also think Professor Jones was very difficult because, I'm writing a personality that is someone, a number of people actually. I get that question a lot too. Did you have experiences with professors who treated you differentially because of your gender? And absolutely, yes, I did. And I've done now some 70 book clubs. I love doing book clubs. We share experiences, and it's shocking to me how many women share those experiences. When I was writing actually about this, I had a good friend of mine who is has been provost of NYU, and he is currently the chair of they call it the History of Art Department. And he read the book and then called me up. He read the ARC, the early copy, and he said, I want to talk to you about the book, but let's do a Zoom. I don't want to write a big academic thing. Then I got really nervous. So the first thing he said to me was, Linda, no one would bring churros, which is kind of a donut thing, to a staff meeting at the Prado. And I go, oh, you're right, Edward. It's really messy. And no, they wouldn't do that. So I think I changed it to chocolates or something. That was easy. Then he said, and the other thing I want to tell you, while we may have some dinosaurs in the university, we pretty much have committees and procedures and, anonymous tip lines and so on. So students don't get treated like this anymore. It's rare. You go, okay, thank you, Edward. And then I took on a project to talk to my daughter, who's an attorney, and some of her friends and some of her contemporaries who'd been to graduate school much more recently than I had. And every one of them said, not only do I think people, this still happens, but I know that guy. He was my biochemistry professor or my contracts law person. And, Maggie, I was never so sad to be right.
Yeah. I mean, two days ago I watched the Golden Globes, and Barbie, which has was a huge the biggest box office draw in ever for a movie, had so many sexist remarks made about it during the ceremony, and I thought, yeah, I mean, we haven't come that far. We've still got a long ways to go. People are still doing that.
That was the point of the movie, right?
It was like, go to see this movie so you can learn, but it's
Did
still
you get
like
it? Did you even get it?
you wrote that character, maybe didn't have that hard a time writing him. Was he kind of easy to write? Because
Well,
it's a character.
so I had two responses to early readers to Professor Jones. One was make him more evil. That was from the publisher. And the other one was, he's two dimensional. He needs to be more nuanced. And I chose to go with the latter advice, to make him not always bad, although always self-interested, in some ways supportive of her when he thought it was in his interest. I had to work on it.
Did it take you to write?
I started in 2015 and it came out in 22. 7 years. And did it take me that long to write? Well, I was working on a number of projects. And at that time in 2015, I was traveling a lot. So I wasn't probably, at my desk every day. And, sometimes it's helpful to put the book away and come back to it. And I did make a lot of changes.
Well, it doesn't sound from what I've learned about your history and what you've shared that you come out of a writing background necessarily. You weren't a writer or a journalist or any of that. How did you even know how to begin to write a novel?
Well, that's a really good question because I, have a couple of master's degrees, so you don't get through that without doing a lot of writing. And, running the gallery, I'd published a lot of journal articles and written for anthologies and other things. So I could write. And I wrote my first novel in around 2010, 11, something like that. Just because a friend of mine had written a book and she invited me to her read and critique group. So I just thought, well, hey, this is interesting. I was kind of pulling away from the gallery and I started writing a novel. I'm a big fan of reading novels. So I think everybody thinks, oh, I can do this. So I wrote this novel. I submitted it to the San Diego book competition. And not only did I not win, I got ruthless criticism.
Oh dear.
And I kept it. I'm so sick. And I actually pulled it out the other day to reread, and I thought, oh, they were so right. In any case, the good news about that experience was I then knew I didn't know what I was doing. So I applied to Stanford's novel writing program, which is a 2-year commitment. And you have to complete a whole novel during the program. And it was the best thing I ever did. I really dedicated myself to learning how to the craft and how to do it. And I'm still a big fan of the craft. And I spend time each year trying to get better and better. It's just not as easy as it looks.
What's the hardest thing for you in writing?
Well, there's hard in two ways. Hard in an intellectual way is having a good story, the right story, revising the story so that it doesn't fall into a sort of a flat kind of plot line or predictable. I mean, there are some things that I personally prefer to avoid, and that it's, first of all, entertaining, but also that it has some substance that brings people to think about the world we're in and where they fit in it. And empathy is a big issue for me in terms of the whole point of the process. So there's that piece. And then there's the piece that I'm really not good at in any aspect of my life. And that's the details that are required out of revision and editing and revising again and editing again. I'm not a patient person. And I think COVID actually saved me to get the first novel out because I had nothing else to do, nowhere to go. And so I really took time, as they say, your rear end in the chair. And I spent the time and I got there. And that was very gratifying.
You've got another book coming out in May called 5 Days in Bogota. Is that correct?
Correct.
Was that easier?
It was a manuscript I'd worked on previously. So it was a little bit harder because I'm a better writer than when I first wrote it. And I had to really, get it in a different mode. I don't know that it might not have been easier to write a brand new book, but in any case, it was what it was. And I was much easier able to see it, but it's still like it's now out as an advanced reader copy, which, should be a pretty polished version, right? And I can tell you, I have almost 100 corrections to the
Oh my
R.
goodness,
They
you're
aren't
in.
revisions. They aren't revisions because she would kill me for that, right? That part's over. They are straight up typos, wrong punctuation, quoted dialogue without the close quotes. I mean, it's just little stuff like that. And I'm obsessive about it, even though impatient, that it has to be as good as I can make it to go out to the world. So I'm in for another round here.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how you got attribution out into the world. You publish with She Writes, which is a those of people that listen to this podcast frequently know it is a hybrid press. So you didn't have to have an agent to approach them. They do curate the manuscripts that they take. Did you go after an agent to begin with, or did you go straight to as She Writes?
The answer is I went straight to She Writes. And I will, I need, it needs a little background. I had written a novel in the Stanford program called The Baobab Tree. It takes place primarily in Africa. So completely different book. And I had some super support. My mentor was Carolyn Leavitt. She wanted me to submit it to different things. And, I got through about five or six or seven queries. I don't remember. Everybody almost asked for the full manuscript, but nobody really took it on. So I thought, I got to think about this a little bit. I did make some friends of agents in the process. I always say, if you can't make a sale, make a friend, right? And then I got to COVID, and I had been working on this different book, more straightforward book than the Africa book, which has three narrators. So you can see a braided narrative like that is tough. It's a complicated story. And listened to a webinar during COVID about publishing and publishing options. And one of the agents on there, who is one of the super good guys, said, I used to tell authors that we respond to initial query within 6 weeks. But now he said, with COVID, it's taking us 6 months. And I was 74, Maggie. So I was 75 when Attribution came out. And I thought, I don't have 6 months to wait for you to tell me you're not interested.
And then you still have to sell it to a publisher. That's just getting.
Exactly. And that's just the beginning. And then the publisher, even if you're the person you're working with likes it, they've got to sell it to a committee and, figure out all kinds of other things. And the publisher can turn it down. You got to start over. Your agent has to start over again. So I looked into different options. I had met Brooke before, Brooke Warner, the publisher of She Writes, and I approached her and I said, do you think you'd be interested in this book? And she said, yes, absolutely. Send me something. And I did. And she immediately said, yes, we'd definitely like to get the book. I did not ask or show the book to any agents or any independent publishers or anyone. I wasn't going to do it myself because I don't have the bandwidth to learn how to make a book. I respect that that is a whole complex process. So I wanted to be sure that whatever it was at least met, high standards of publishing. And She Writes does that. The other thing She Writes does, and I noted that they are having a seminar soon on the with the Independent Book Publishers Association, the IBPA, about publishing options. And they've divided the agenda so they have hybrid presses, which means the author's a co-investor in the project. So you have to come up with some money, you have to pay for the printing, et cetera. Different hybrids do it differently. But She Writes is one of those hybrids that has distribution. And most authors don't know enough to ask about that, but distribution is critical. If you are not with a respected traditional distributor, you are not going to get your book into bookstores. You're maybe not going to get them in libraries. And those are huge markets still, even with online book distributors. It's still a really critical thing to be connected to that writing and bookselling community. So anyway, I respected that, she writes, was at that time with Ingram Publisher Services, which was kind of a gold standard, where bookstores and others can order the book. And if they don't sell the book, they can return the book. So books are on consignment.
Have you had luck getting into bookstores and libraries as a result then?
Yes. I am kind of business oriented toward this because of my background. So I keep very careful track. That's something else that Hybrid can offer. Not all authors want it or ask for it, but you can get your sales data. I know where every book has gone. I know every bookstore. I know the top four people that order my books. I know how many print books, how many ebooks. I know all of it. And right now, I can tell you, because I just did the numbers for the end of the year, we have sold 9,600 copies of Attribution. And I think that's pretty good for a debut book.
Across the different mediums, so ebooks and print books, and
correct.
I don't know.
Correct.
You have an audiobook too or not?
We do. I was actually offered an audiobook contract. So I was given an advance with Tantor. And the audiobook for Attribution is coming out before the end of January. So if you follow my website, lindamoreauthor.com, you'll get updates on, you know, when the audiobook is available.
Now, you mentioned that you have been to 70 book clubs, I think, and that doesn't count the presentations you've done. So you've been a very busy woman getting the word out about this. How did you go about finding that many book clubs? And just what do you feel like was a good approach? How did you find these people and how did you approach them?
I'm one of those authors who, you know, I came from the background of owning an art gallery, and you don't sell art without being willing to talk about it and what you're doing and why it's
need a story.
Need a story. And I am like that about the book too. And I'm very proud of the book, and I have no trouble offering it. Like I say to women, especially, I say, you know, if you had a great chocolate chip cookie recipe, you'd have no problem saying, Maggie, try my cookies. They're really good. Everyone seems to like them. So why do we women have such a problem saying, my book, I'm really proud of it. A lot of people seem to like it. I'm getting some good reviews. You might enjoy it. It might offer you some hours of entertainment for, you know, $20 or whatever it costs.
Yeah.
And I don't have a problem doing that. I think there's value in a number of marketing things I did that led me to the book clubs. You know, we had a big launch. We had it at the San Diego Museum of Art, which anybody can do that.
But it's a perfect tie-in to the book.
Exactly. And they have a great Baroque art collection. So it was connected even to the storyline. And because it was a big venue, we could have 220 some people there. And the way we set it up was a ticket was to purchase the book and a small donation to the art museum. So it was a co-fundraiser for the art museum. At the same time, it sold a lot of books, got them out to a lot of people. And then because we sold that out, we did another event at Warwick's, which is a great bookstore in San Diego. And we also sold that out. But a lot of work on my part to get the word out, right? And from there, I met a few people who said, would you do my book club, or friends that have book clubs? I'm in four book clubs myself, and I think they all did the book. Then when people would ask me, oh, so how's your book doing? I would always say, I'd always lead with the statement, I'm doing a lot of book clubs, having a great time. And that's sincere. I really do love to be with people who've read the book and want to talk about what's in it.
It's a different experience.
Totally. Honestly, I was so impressed. There's so many book clubs. I went to one book event and a woman there said, I love this book. I am buying 10 copies because I want to buy one for everyone in my book club. And that book club was in Montana. And yes, of course, I did it on Zoom. And I do prefer to be in person, right? It's so much more interesting. But Zoom, I think that people had a good time because hearing from the author and being able to ask the author questions is a really nice experience than just sort of having the standard questions at the back of the book or whatever. I've learned every book club is different. I mean, there are those book clubs, they walk in the door and say, where's the wine? And what was the name of the book again? I have those book clubs. and then there's people who you feel they wrote a term paper to come to the book club, right? That they've researched all the reviews and, you know, gone many levels beyond.
I've had people ask me about characters and I think, you know, I wrote this like, I don't know, it's been out 2 years and I wrote it 2 years before that. I don't remember all these people. I've in my head, I'm in my current book. You know, and
or
so,
even worse, they quote lines from the book to you. And then you go and they said, oh, I love this line. And they quote it. And you go, wow, I love that too. Who wrote that? And in 5 days in Bogota, I tell a story about meeting Garcia Marquez in Colombia. And actually, he said that to me because I was talking about some quotes from the book. And he said, you know, he takes his glasses, puts them on his head and back down. He goes, you know, what happens to me is I don't remember what I wrote. And that was from 100 Days of Solitude.
Those are great stories. I mean, you seem like you are having a great time doing this.
No,
are there
yeah.
any things that you tried that you would say to someone, that's not a very good idea? It didn't work out.
Well, I did things that I felt weren't really worth the time, but I think every book is different. And I don't know that I'd name those things as, I think you have to try yourself and find what fits for you. Like somebody, an author I totally respect, she's got 3 or 4 books out now. And I asked her the question about a sophomore book, you know, this, I'm very nervous because people say, you know, others do a lot for your debut book and so on and so forth. I've recently gotten a lot less hand wringing and a lot more confidence about the second book, but we'll see what happens. Said to me that as time goes on, look forward to more spending your time writing and less performance, performative, she used that word. And I know what she means because, you know, it takes a lot of time to go out and be with book clubs or bookstores or other talks and events. But at the same time, it gives me energy too. You know, it gives me energy to believe in what I'm doing. And that might not be true for another author. Another author might find her whole world is fine at her desk.
And also there is the fact that with 2 books, you can always be selling both those books, you know, in effect. But you're right. I think there is a great deal of, you've used up some of your chits with your first one. And so the people that wanted to do you a favor and weren't really doing it because they like the book necessarily, they like you and they want to support you. You come back the second time, they may be going, well, I don't know.
So that was one thing I learned as you asked me, how did you get so many book clubs? You know, a lot of people in book clubs are in more than one.
Yes.
So if they had a good experience at the first one, they would then be excited to invite you to their other book club and so on. So I learned a couple of things. One is to adjust what I was doing to the needs of the book club and not, you know, a set program.
Right.
The second thing, I have a rule, a saying in my head, whatever you do, don't be boring. And that's one reason I'm not really a fan of reading from my books, because I think the experience of reading it yourself is way different than, say, a passage I might choose. But in any case, I think it's interesting to engage with people and talk about things that interest them, be able to have a really rich conversation around books. That is kind of my mantra. I hope it carries me through the second book.
Well, that's a perfect segue, given that you don't want to be boring, to ask you, what's quirky about you, Linda?
Well, you wanted something, you were thinking something you may not know about me. I can think
yes.
of many quirky things, but here's one for your neighborhood, Maggie. I have 72 first cousins in the Midwest.
Wow.
Yeah. My mother came from a really big family. She was born in Duluth, Minnesota. And they are all over Minnesota, Michigan, Wisconsin. My dad was born in Iowa. Yeah, so I don't even know them all. I really probably should reach out to them because that would be a good place to tell more people about the book.
Cousin book club. Have them all meet each other. Maybe they all know each
actually,
other.
That's a brilliant idea because we're all kind of old. We've lost a few. But yeah, what a great idea, like a family reunion, only a book club. I love it.
You can report back as to whether you take that.
I will do. I will do.
Well, it was a pleasure talking to you, Linda. And again, her book is Attribution, that we mainly talked about, her debut, but also coming in May, 5 days in Bogota. And thank you very much for being on the program.
My pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.